Hello, my name is Nate, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, and today I want to tell you guys a little bit about how I recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, and explain what that hopeless state of mind and body is, to tell you a little bit about what I was like. I'll try to describe what happened and how I recovered and how that was given to me and what my life is like now. So real briefly, I said I'd recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, and it's very important that I try to explain what that is, because not everyone who comes to an OA meeting, for example, necessarily is a real compulsive overeater of the variety that I am. So I've met many people who come to meetings and they have a little trouble with food here and there, but they're not necessarily, they don't suffer necessarily from the same condition of mind and body that I've suffered from. So I think it's very important to be very clear about what exactly the condition is. And fortunately, we have some great tools here in OA to diagnose ourselves. So I invite anybody listening to go ahead and just compare and try to diagnose yourself and see if you relate to the condition that I'll describe. So for myself, the hopeless condition of body, I'll describe that first. What that is for me is that once I put certain foods in my body, certain substances, I no longer have any power of choice over whether and when I will stop. So for example, sugary things, often fried things, things that are recognizably desserts, once I start putting them in my body, I really find that I experience this craving where I become more insatiable and I desire to have more. So for example, if I drink water, I become less thirsty, right? As I put more water in my body, my thirst goes down. But when I put these foods in my body, or certain food behaviors, for example, eating when I don't know when the end of the meal is, or eating things out of a bag that I'm just sort of like snacking on mindlessly, I find myself in this position where my brain is telling my hand to stop bringing food to my mouth, and yet my hand is still bringing food to my mouth over and over and over again. And maybe I even put the bag away or the box away, or put the ice cream back in the freezer or whatever, and then I'm getting up again to get more, like a few minutes later, and then I put it away because I feel ashamed and I'm kind of hating myself and I wish I could stop, and then I'm getting up again to get more. And this is what we call the phenomenon of craving. So my body just reacts differently than other people's to these food substances. Sugary things. Also fake sweetener, as it turns out. So I can't even chew sugar-free gum without chewing it compulsively and just putting more and more of it in my mouth. And it can also be fried things, things that are too salty and sweet. I've just sort of like the list of things that I've discovered that I experience craving for has grown as I've grown in recovery as well. This sets me apart from other people. So it looks to me like normal eaters can just have a little bit and they stop. And so my family are all normal eaters, and I know many other people who are just not that interested in food. It's not doing for them what it's doing for me. But what it's doing for me is it's creating this craving for more. So one example of this is I remember being at I think it was middle school, and they had this fundraiser, and they were for something, and they were selling Krispy Kreme donuts. And my friend and I each bought a box of donuts, as you know, seventh graders will do. My friend had two donuts and said he felt sick and he stopped eating. And what I did is I had two with him, or maybe three, I'm not sure. But then after school, I was experiencing this craving for more of the donuts. So I remember I hid in a ditch near the school before my mom arrived, or maybe while she was waiting for me, and I wolfed down the rest of the donuts. And then I got in the car and went home and had snack. And that was the kind of behavior I did all the time as a kid. I was always trying to eat more, especially when no one was looking. And I would actually leave social situations to continue to eat. So I remember waiting for my parents to leave the house, because then I looked forward to eating the way that I really wanted to. Or I'd start eating like cookies that we'd made for Christmas that we'd had stored in the freezer. And I'd find myself just like eating more and more of them, like really quickly, and trying to hide hide the evidence, hiding, the wrappers, or just hiding any evidence of anything that I was eating. I did that all the time. And I felt so much shame about this, but I was still just doing it. And this was happening from a fairly early age. And so I was experiencing this craving that was beyond my control, and it made me different than other people. And I was very confused because I thought it was just a matter of like willpower, right? People would tell me to have some self-control and just stop, just don't have like the second bowl of ice cream or the third bowl or whatever, or another piece of pizza. People would say, you should really think about, slowing down, or why don't you just not have that? Because I was gaining weight, and I think people could tell that I was unhappy with what I was doing to myself with food. My parents certainly knew that, and yet I heard them telling me to have self-control, but it just wasn't really connecting to this thing that I actually had in my experience. I didn't really know what the self-control muscle is, or how to access it. And I thought, if the food is really doing, I really still believe that if the food did for them what it did for me, then they would have eaten the way that I was eating. It wasn't doing that for them. It was just they would just eat and go on with their lives. I mean, I've seen people like literally forget to finish, a cookie or whatever, or to finish dinner or leave food on their plate. That's just not my experience. And for me, this got really bad. I mean, I was towards the end, I was binging and purging like 4 or 5 times a day, and I would go on these really just prolonged binges where I would just eat enormous quantities of sugar and fat, and it was all hidden. It was all in secret. Again, the hopeless state of body that I suffer from is just that, once I start eating these foods, I really don't know, when I'm going to stop, and I really don't have control, once they go in my body. But, that's not even, to be honest, my real problem. My real problem is the hopeless condition of my mind, because, the problem is that I'm obsessed with food all the time, and I always end up going back to it. No matter what I try to do to fix the external circumstances around my food, inside my head, I'm thinking about what I'm going to be eating later and how it's going to make me feel better, or what I wish I could be eating, or what there is at this party or at this dinner event or at this buffet that I can have next, especially if I need to find a way to hide, then I'm going to have it, or if I'm going to leave the social situation I'm in to go eat more. And I'm thinking about the food that I'm going to have later, or I'm thinking about the food that I already have and feeling ashamed about what I did. And generally, just my mind is just obsessed and occupied with like what I'm eating and when I'm eating it and how much I'm eating it and if I had enough or if I had too much. And I just genuinely don't know, but I'm genuinely just obsessed with the food. And it's really all I can think about. And the problem is that when I don't have those foods, when I try to eat in a sane way or in a way that seems like how other people eat, I experience this just discomfort. I'm just an uncomfortable person. And the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a useful text for this, and it explains the situation very well. So in the chapter at the beginning called The Doctor's Opinion, it says this, and I'm going to read it as it's written. It's about alcohol, but you can just sort of mentally translate for food, because it applies to me for food. So men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. So I was eating essentially because I liked the effect produced by the food. I wasn't eating because I needed more nutrition or because my body was genuinely hungry. I was eating for this sensation, this effect. And I admitted it was injurious and I knew that it was a problem, but I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. It says, to them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So I just couldn't imagine living any other way, relating to food differently, and to not being obsessed with food all the time. I just didn't know that was even possible. I didn't know it was possible to not really care about food because it was all I'd ever known. And so I'd watch other people eat and stop, or just like food wasn't a big part of their lives and their bodies were normal shaped and they just didn't seem to care that much. And I just couldn't even imagine living that way. Or I thought they all had some secret willpower muscle that, they were really as obsessed as I was. They just learned to say no or something. Turns out that's not the case. Okay, this says they're restless, talking about alcoholics, they're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, which they see others taking with impunity. So This is a great way to describe me on any given day. I am restless, irritable, and discontented. I'm just uncomfortable. I am neurotic and I'm anxious. I don't feel good in my own skin. I've actually been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, not otherwise specified, which I think is just sort of a clinical way of saying that I'm very uncomfortable pretty much all the time. And I feel like there's something wrong with me, but I don't really know what it is. And I feel like I'm disconnected from other people. I'm not really part of, and I just have this vague background sense of shame all the time, especially about my body and about my eating, but also just about who I am, and I just don't feel like I really connect or fit in. But I get a sense of ease and comfort, which comes by that food. That food provides this sense of almost like companionship or intimacy, or just it's like I know that because that didn't really feel like what I was doing, but I was choosing food over relationships. So I would be hanging out with friends or my family, and I would actually, you know, towards the end, I would just leave them, hang out with them. I'd lie and I would go eat the way that I really wanted to. So it was like food was like my real friend, even though it was killing me and I was hating myself for what I was doing. So then it says, after they succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. So I would emerge from my binge and feel terrible and just hate myself. Like the morning after a binge, and just as soon as my head comes off the pillow, I'm just immediately just disgusted with myself and frustrated and discouraged and just full of self-loathing and shame. And I'd have this firm resolution not to eat again. And I'd you know, maybe go to the gym and like drink a lot of coffee and drink a lot of water and sort of try to like detox my system. But probably by that night, I'd find myself doing it again. And I'd just repeat this over and over. And I also, you know, I tried other methods. So I've been to psychologists and therapists and counselors and eating disorder treatments, and those are all great, and I think they helped me in various ways, and I have nothing against them, but they couldn't help me change the way that I related to food. And hopefully it's clear by now that this wasn't a nutritional issue. It wasn't a matter of just needing better information about how to eat in a healthy way. I wasn't confused about you know, what was the right foods to be eating, what was healthy, what was unhealthy. It wasn't a matter of just getting accurate nutrition advice. It was more this sort of hopeless state of mind and body that I'm once I start, I can't stop. And once I stop, I can't stay stopped. So I have experience with, you know, even being in OA and relapsing with, you know, a few days, a few weeks, or even a few months of abstinence, and which means that I wasn't binging compulsively, I wasn't eating compulsively, and then I was. Something happened. And the AA book calls it a strange mental blank spot or peculiar mental twist. I would find myself just suddenly binging again, and I didn't even really honestly know what happened. I had some ideas, and I could sort of tell you a story or some kind of justification, but at the end of the day, I really didn't know why I did it. And so my mind always takes me back to the food, and that's the hopeless state of body, is that once I start, I can't stop. But the hopeless state of my mind is that once I stop, I just can't stay stopped. The real problem is just living without the food, just being in my own skin. That's so uncomfortable and so challenging for me. So when I came into OA, I was reasonably open to this idea of doing the steps as a way of treating this condition, because I could tell that the problem was in my mind and in my the way I related to food, and it was a psychological, emotional, and spiritual issue. And I had so much shame and so much anxiety that I was open to the 12-step program. And the 12 steps, as I understand it, are a path that I can follow that gives me access to this power that grants me freedom, and it grants me neutrality. So it's allowed me to recover from this hopeless condition. So by the grace of God, I haven't had to binge eat or make myself throw up in since October, a better part of 5 years at the time of this recording. I'll just say that. So it's been almost 5 years, and that's truly a miracle. I mean, I you just heard my condition, right? It was hopeless. And as this text says, there's very little hope of his recovery, but I have experienced an entire psychic change. And so what happened is a little hard to describe, but I knew that the 12 steps worked because I'd seen that power working in other people. I heard other people in OA tell their stories, and I knew that I was one of them, and I identified with them. And I knew that there was power in working the 12 steps, and I'd experienced some freedom from doing that in previous attempts at recovery. I don't know how to describe it except to just try to explain. It was like this powerful sense of grace began to kind of dawn on me, and I had this. This might sound flaky, but to be honest, this is just what it felt like. It felt like I was being pursued by this loving power that was trying to give me something better than what I was doing. It was almost like there was this gift that God was trying to give me that was better than the life that I currently had. And it was almost like God was sad that I, you know, God wasn't mad at me. God wasn't disappointed, because that's how I related to myself. Like, I would always try to shame myself, or just sort of like, you know, as if somehow I could, you know, if I beat myself up enough, then next time I'll remember how painful it was, and then I won't eat again. But God wasn't mad at me. He wasn't disappointed. It was more just like this sense of like sadness that he had like sort of gotten me this gift of a different life, a better life that was possible. And I was choosing to cling to this other smaller thing instead. And it was almost like God was sad that I didn't want that. And that I was choosing this other thing. And that the kind of, it almost like broke my own heart to see kind of what I was doing. And I was so tired of the way that I was choosing food over relationships, and just so hopeless. And I also really just became aware that it wasn't going to get better. You know, I sort of imagined that at some point I just kind of grow out of it. Like, someday I'll just be normal. And I just began to realize that day was never going to come. And that made me hopeless, but it also made me open to this recovery process. And my experience is just that I've been given power by surrendering. So if you're not familiar with the steps, a lot of the work in the steps is some form of an act of surrender. And I surrendered to the fact that I am powerless. And that was a real relief, because it's not a moral problem. Like, I'm not a bad person. That's not why I binged. Although it did make me, I was selfish and dishonest in many ways. But really, it's not a willpower issue. It's just that my body reacts differently than other people's. But I came to experience that there's this power that comes by surrendering. So for whatever reason, when I try to orient myself to ask this question, like, what is God's will for me, and then try to actually do that and try to be of service to other people, which is almost always part of what God's will is for me. And when I sort of orient myself to be open to the idea of making God look good rather than me look good, and what would God have me do rather than what would I have me do, I just get freedom. And it's very bizarre. It's not what I would have expected to be the solution, but it gives me relief from myself, from my shame, from my anxiety. And there's a lot of constructive action to take. So I've been given I've been able to write several inventories and take a good look at my selfishness and dishonesty and all the things that are blocking me from experiencing connection to God and to other people. And you've heard me reference God a couple of times already. And you know, I don't apologize for God, and the book talks about how we don't apologize for God. And you know, it's you are more than welcome in any OA meeting if you don't believe in God. I know many people who are atheists or agnostics, and I want to be super clear that you can absolutely choose your own conception of a higher power in this program, and you don't have to believe the same things that I believe. So please just know that you're welcome, regardless of how you your experience is with spirituality or not. But I'd be lying to you if I told you that it happened any other way for me. I really just don't know another way. And this is how it happened for me, is just experiencing the presence of God. And there's things that I do to continue to grow in that connection. And they're fairly clearly laid out in some instructions in the AA book, which is the way that I've been taught to work the steps. And that has to do with praying to be of service throughout the day, praying for relief from self, and writing this inventory, making amends. I've gotten to really make a lot of really cool amends, and I'm no longer afraid to run into people, like people whose food I stole. I don't have any of those like reactions like, oh, I hope I don't run into that person. I can look myself and look those people in the eye, and I've gotten so much relief from the shame about my food behavior that I couldn't explain and just couldn't control, and about my body. What else do I want to say? Okay. So, coming into program was also a little bit challenging for me because I'm relatively young. So as of time of this recording, I just turned 28 recently. And so I told you I've been, abstinent for, nearly 5 years. So I was 23, when I came into, program. And when I got abstinent this last time, and I'd been to meetings even before that. And so I felt a little bit different from other people because a lot of people were older. And also I'm a guy, and most people in program are women. And so I felt a little bit apart from, a little bit disconnected, and I really resisted identifying with people as kind of my tribe, and to some degree I still do struggle with that. And to be honest, what really kept me here was just the awareness that there was nowhere else to go, there wasn't going to be like some kind of diet club or whatever. And I tried therapy, and I needed the fellowship. And I did meet some really great people, especially people who had also recovered. And they had a way of life and a way of talking, and a way of carrying themselves that was very attractive. I wanted that. And now I still stick around and participate in recovery and in giving service and in going to meetings, not just for my own benefit, but rather to try to help carry a message. So I see it as, I'd like to do my small part to make OA the place that I would like it to be, so that it's available for people like me who suffer from a hopeless condition of mind and body, younger people, men, just anybody who needs to hear a message of recovery. If I can help make that available by telling my story or by sharing exactly how I recovered, that's a beautiful thing. And that's also how I stay free. There's this weird sort of paradox in our 12th step, which is that by carrying the message to other people and by trying to be useful, that is how we continue to grow in our own recovery. And that works when everything else fails. So I've never seen anybody relapse or slip who is working with a lot of new people and helping others in their recovery, and working on steps 10, 11, and 12 on a regular basis. It seems like the people who continue to struggle are people who don't orient themselves to be of service. And so for whatever reason, there's just kind of this way that that I'm wired as an addict where I need to get out of myself and to carry a message of hope and recovery. So that's part of why, to be honest, I even do something like this recording is I hope it helps whoever's listening. But to be honest, even if it doesn't really help you, if you're still listening to this far into the recording, I hope it's helping you. But if it's not, I'm still getting the benefit right now of trying to do this service. That's actually strengthening my own recovery. So it's this weird kind of paradox that by trying to give it away, I actually get more. And helping others is the foundation of my recovery, as the book talks about. And there's also just this beautiful thing that precisely my worst moments now make me the most useful. It talks about how we don't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. And I've got these horror stories of binging and purging, and I didn't even tell many of them, but just or the shame or the lying or the stealing food or whatever. And precisely those things that were the most demoralizing and the most discouraging, or the relapses, now make me the most useful to other people, because people who have those experiences and they're demoralized or discouraged, I can actually offer them some hope because of my experience and because of the power that's come into my life to give me this recovery. So paradoxically, it's exactly the worst moments, the most the ugliest, the most demoralizing, that now make me the most useful and the most, and that brings me, joy and freedom. So, I just want you to know that you also have a story, and you know, if you are recovered, then you can bring recovery to someone else. And if you aren't recovered yet, please find someone at a phone meeting or at a local meeting who has recovered and ask them how they did it, and you know, see if it can work for you too. There's fairly straightforward directions for how to do it, and it is work. I won't lie. I mean, the path is a little bit narrow in the terms of like doing the inventory and making the amends and you know, continuing to be of service and the prayer and the meditation. It does demand a certain amount of thoroughness and rigor, but it's actually very simple, and I really honestly wouldn't trade it for anyone else, any other life. I think I have a life second to none, and I think anybody who has recovered would tell you the same thing. And when I say I have recovered, you know, the way that I explain that real briefly is just that I no longer suffer from that hopeless state of mind and body, and I have neutrality around food. So I'm not struggling with the obsessive thoughts about food. I'm not batting away temptations to eat this or that thing. I can go to social settings, parties, you know, around the holidays, whatever, and it really doesn't phase me. I'm not sitting there like thinking like, that looks so good, you know, the ice cream people are having or whatever. I don't feel like I'm missing out. I really don't. And I already know that I've already had enough cookies for one lifetime anyway. But more to the point, I'm neutral toward it. And that's what I didn't know was possible when I first came into recovery. I didn't know it was possible to just have the volume on that whole thing just go way down, to just have the noise from food just turn off. It was all I ever knew. So I didn't know that it was possible to just not be that interested in food, to just eat my meal and move on. But that is what's available here. You know, if you get a food plan that works for you and put down the foods that cause craving and experience the spiritual recovery so that you can recover as well. And that's that neutrality, that it's just it just doesn't talk to me anymore. And that's a miracle. Because I can never win that argument with myself. You know, if I'm actively deliberating about whether to binge, it's already game over. It's too exhausting to fight. And so fortunately, I don't have to fight anymore. All right, that's plenty of time. I want to thank the Young People's Committee for inviting me to tell my story. And I want you to know that if you relate to the hopeless condition of mind and body that I described, then we do have a solution for you here in OA. And just find someone who has recovered and ask them how they're doing it. Thanks so much. Bye.